pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
Is it permissible, according to Ayatollah Sistani, to talk to a non-mahram woman?
It's permissible per se, you see? Mm-hmm. Talking about normal topics, about daily issues, mm-hmm. of course permissible, as long as one is confident that he or she is not going to fall into a sin. But okay, talking for the sake of talking and chatting and expressing love, joking with a non-mahram, these are forbidden, okay? And if it is feared that they might fall into a sin, okay? If it's feared that they might fall into a sin, it's not permissible for them to talk with each other, okay? And it's, if they want to talk, they should talk in open spaces, not in a closed room, okay? Because there's a hadith that when a man sits with a non-mahram woman, these two, there is a third
party,
which is shaitan.
I see.
So shaitan will deceive them and will cause them to fall into sin.
Sheikh Tawfiq, did I get it right in the answer to my previous question? You mentioned that it is not permissible for a man to express his love to a woman.
Yeah.
But what if they want to get married?
Yeah. Love is a matter of the heart. You see, it's something in your heart. Okay, you can express your decision, you can let the other person know that you want to get married to her, but okay, to say I love you or to express your love is not permissible according to Ayatollah Sistani. He is of the view that expressing love and joking and talking in a way which is so intimate, is showing such kind of love and behavior is not permissible.
I see.
Okay, there's a difference between showing love and expressing love, and also mere loving, okay? Because you might love someone, but you do not express it. You keep it in your heart, okay?
Right.
As long as you do not express it, there's no problem. You love someone, and you do not express it.
I see. What about a woman riding a horse in public? Is it permissible according to Ayatollah Sistani?
Ayatollah Sistani says that if it is provocative, okay, it's not permissible for a woman to ride a horse. And depending on the society, on the people where she might want to ride a horse, okay? In some places it's very much
common
and it does not catch any people's attention,
mm-hmm.
So there's no problem, okay? But in other places, if a woman rides a horse, it can attract a lot of attention, so it's not permissible.
Does the same law apply to a woman riding a bike or a motorbike?
Yeah, the Ayatollah Sistani gives the same answer to this scenario.
I see.
He says if it is provocative, it's not permissible. And of course, you know, when a woman starts biking, I think it can be provocative for men, yes. So there is an if and there is a result, okay? If it is provocative, it's not permissible.
How about driving a car?
There's no objection. There's no problem in driving a car because you are in your own privacy. And of course, you drive without anyone. Even being able to see you, it's so common, you see? And it's all the religious authorities, as far as I know, the Shia religious authorities, I'm not speaking about some Sunni Muslim countries like Saudi Arabia, for example, where women are not allowed to drive, but recently they have started driving, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in Iran, for example, we see that women have always been allowed to drive, And of course, there's no problem, there's no objection to women driving. It is permissible, and all the religious authorities have allowed women to drive.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Glory be to Allah.
Glory be to Allah.
All praise to Allah.
All praise to Allah.
There is no God but Allah.
Allah is great.
All power and might belong to Allah, the Most High, the Great.
Subhanallah.
Walhamdulillah.
ولا إله إلا الله والله أحمد
ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم
سبحان الله والحمد لله ولا إله إلا الله والله أحمد
ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم
In the limelight.
Both Facebook and Instagram are facing allegations of censorship following the erratic, widespread removal of recent posts from pro-Palestinian users critical of the Israeli regime, including those who documented instances of Israeli regime violence. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Sam Biddle, reporter. This article is published under the heading Facebook's secret rules about word Zionist impede criticism of Israeli regime. Stay tuned for more. Facebook's secret internal rules for moderating the term Zionist let the social network suppress criticism of Israeli regime amid an ongoing wave of Israeli regime abuses and violence, according to people who reviewed the policies. The rules appear to have been in place since 2019, seeming to contradict the claim by the company in March that no decision had been made on whether to treat the term Zionist as a proxy for Jew when determining whether it was deployed as hate speech. The policies obtained by The Intercept govern the use of Zionist in posts not only on Facebook but across its subsidiary apps, including Instagram. Both Facebook and Instagram are facing allegations of censorship following the erratic, widespread removal of recent posts from pro-Palestinian users critical of the Zionist regime, including those who documented instances of the Zionist regime violence. Facebook claims that their policy on the word Zionist is about Jewish safety. Danny Noble, an organizer with Jewish Voice for Peace, who reviewed the rules, told The Intercept. He added, "But according to their content policy excerpt, it seems Facebook decision makers are more concerned with shielding Zionist Israeli settlers and the Israeli regime from accountability for these crimes." Though none of Facebook and Instagram's content removal has been tied conclusively to the term Zionist, users and pro-Palestinian advocates were alarmed by disappearing posts and notices of policy violations over the last week. Facebook said the sudden deletion of deeply disturbing content documenting Israeli violence was, as the company so often claims, just a big accident. Company spokesperson Sophie Vogel, in an email to The Intercept, blamed the deleted posts, many about their recent attempts to seize Palestinian homes by Israeli settlers, on an unspecified wire technical issue within Instagram, and on a series of mistaken deletions and human error. Facebook did not provide comment about when the rules were implemented and the apparent contradiction with its public statements that such a policy was still under consideration and not being actively used. Though the company claims its content decisions are increasingly made automatically by machines, Facebook and Instagram still rely on legions of low-paid contractors around the world left to delete or preserve posts through a mix of personal judgment calls and the application of Byzantine rule books, flowcharts, and hypothetical examples. Critics noted that the first example is tied to a frequent and often violent real-world event, seizures of Palestinian homes by Israeli regime settlers, almost always carried out with justifications rooted in ideological Zionism or Israeli regime policies themselves rooted in Zionism. The advocates who questioned Facebook's rules on the term Zionist worry they would collapse denunciations of such action and state policies into hate speech against Jews, making it difficult to criticize Israeli regime online at all. The absurdity, futility, and politicized nature of Facebook's policy should be as clear as day right now, as we witness continued ethnic cleansing in occupied Al-Quds and a new war on the besieged population of Gaza, said Dima Khalidi, director of Palestine Legal and Advocacy Group. He added, the fundamental problem is that Zionism is a political ideology that justifies exactly the kind of force expulsion of Palestinians, making some Palestinian refugees three times over that we are seeing right now in Sheikh Jarrah and other occupied East Al-Quds neighborhoods. Critics said Facebook's decision to zero on Zionist as an ethnic identity elides the fact that it describes a concrete ideological choice and ignores how Palestinians and others have come to use the word in the context of their historical repression by the Israeli regime. This focus inhibits the very political discourse and protest throughout the world that Facebook claims it's protecting, according to Gillian York, the Electronic Frontier Foundation's Director for International Freedom of Expression and a longtime critic of Facebook's moderation practices. Further, its use in the region is different. Palestinians use it as a synonym for colonizer, not for Jew. Though Facebook said that no Instagram posts about the recent Israeli regime violence were removed at the request of the Zionist regime, the country routinely makes such requests to the largely compliant company. The existence of the Zionist rules comes as a surprise to Palestinian advocates who say Facebook previously created the impression that limits and using the term Zionist were being considered within the company but not actually implemented.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Tensions in the Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank escalated after Israel launched a heavy-handed crackdown on worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the holy month of Ramadan. The Israeli military pounded areas in the Gaza Strip, killing and injuring hundreds of civilians, among them women and children. But unlike the regime's other military campaigns against Gaza, Palestinian resistance groups responded forcefully to the aggression, launching a barrage of missiles and drones and inflicting heavy damage and casualties on the enemy. A top Israeli general has acknowledged the rising missile power of the Palestinian resistance groups, saying the Israeli regime is now faced with, quote, the highest ever rate of rocket attacks. In a press conference on Sunday, Major General Ori Gordon said Palestinian resistance groups based in Gaza had fired around 3,000 rockets toward the occupied territories over the past several days, surpassing the pace seen during an escalation in 2019 and the 2006 war with Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance group. In the meantime, violence has erupted across Israeli cities, with clashes between members of the Arab and Jewish communities increasing over the past week.
The violence within 48 Palestine alongside the resistance efforts from Palestinians all over Palestine is putting the Israeli regime in an unprecedented situation. Most of all, these developments display the weakness of the Israeli colonial project as such, and are also a danger for Israel's so-called security. Security, of course, meaning in the Israeli context, the successful continuation of the apartheid regime within 48 Palestine and the military occupation beyond. And the Palestinians in 48 Palestine have at best been second-class citizens. So, and Israel has used them for propaganda efforts, portray itself internationally as an alleged democracy with coexistence. And so this image is currently crumbling to some extent.
Also, the damage Israel is facing is thought to be much more severe when the economic impact of the incursion on Gaza is factored in. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations have been held in several cities around the world in the past few days, with protesters decrying the raids on the densely populated Gaza Strip. Protesters in the United States called for an immediate halt to all funds Washington provides to the regime. Calls for an end to the attacks were echoed by the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
The current hostilities are utterly appalling. This latest round of violence only perpetuates the cycles of death, destruction, and despair, and pushes farther to the horizon any hope of coexistence and peace. Fighting must stop. It must stop immediately.
Analysts say the Israeli army's attacks on the Gaza Strip on the one hand, and the raging conflict in the occupied West Bank on the other, will prove costly for the regime and will especially undermine its post-COVID-19 pandemic economic recovery.
The current events and the manifold proclamations of solidarity with Palestinians worldwide might actually have serious implications for Israel and for its economy, but it also needs to be seen how the situation will develop, because after all, it is the significant support of the United States, Germany, and the European Union that has kept Israel's economy and, of course, its oppressive apartheid regime alive.
Israel's closest ally, the United States, is also coming under fire for refusing to take a firm stance against the crimes being committed against the people of Palestine and blocking the United Nations Security Council meeting and statement on the issue. The international community's condemnation, together with the ramifications of the attacks on social unrest in the Israeli cities, would have bad optics for Israel, which is already grappling with political uncertainty amid the lack of a coalition cabinet.
On May 15, 1948, the regime forced some 750,000 Palestinians to leave their homes and villages and expelled them into refugee camps that still exist in the occupied West Bank, Gaza, Jordan, Syria, and Lebanon. Armed forces massacred entire villages of men, women, and even children. That pushed rightful owners of Palestine to leave their homes and lands as they feared losing their lives. Consequently, that provided the ground for Zionists to establish the Israeli regime. The Palestinians were to suffer further when the West Bank and Gaza fell to the Israelis during the Six-Day War in 1967. Millions of Palestinians, including those displaced since 1948, found themselves under military occupation as well as further Israeli expansionism in their lands. In 2020, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unveiled his intention to annex the occupied West Bank with the support of the United States. The move is widely condemned as it is considered illegal and in defiance of international law. For many Palestinians, that is just the last chapter in a process that has started with the initial loss of their lands in 1948. More than 600,000 Israelis currently live in over 230 settlements built since the 1967 Israeli occupation of the West Bank and East Jerusalem Al-Quds. That's while all Israeli settlement activities are illegal under international law. Every year, Palestinians reaffirm their right to return to their homes and villages in historic Palestine on Nakba Day. They hold annual rallies to commemorate decades of ethnic cleansing of their homeland by the regime to establish what's known today as Israel. This year, Palestinians and their supporters across the globe mark the day amid Israel's deadly aggression against Palestinians in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip.
The Israeli government is taking more land in the West Bank. More than two-thirds of the West Bank has been swallowed by the Israeli settlements, and every day they are also taking more land in Jerusalem. As we have seen in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, they are kicking Palestinians out of their hands, of their homes and lands in order to replace them with Israeli, with Jewish settlers. It will continue because the Palestinians are not willing to surrender to the Israeli to the Israeli policies of ethnic cleansing.
In a pre-dawn airstrike, Israeli warplanes attacked Al-Shati refugee camp in western Gaza on Saturday. 8 children and 2 women were killed while 15 others were injured. Following that, Hamas's military wing, the Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades, said it has fired tens of rockets at Tel Aviv and Ashdod in retaliation for Israel's attacks on the Gaza Strip. The Izzeddin al-Qassam Brigades also said they launched drone and mortar attacks on Israel's Kisafim military base. The group has announced it is prepared to bomb Tel Aviv for 6 months in a row. Hamas has recently stepped up attacks on Israel in response to the regime's aggression on the besieged territory. Israel's Ramon Airport, as well as cities of Ashkelon and Ashdod, have also come under missile attacks in the past few days. On Saturday afternoon, the Israeli regime also flattened the 11-story Al Jalla building that housed the offices of Al Jazeera and the Associated Press News Agency. Press freedom advocates sharply condemned the move, calling it a brazen attempt to silence journalists covering the Israeli military's ongoing offensive that has killed scores of people.
They will continue to do so because they are launching a war against not only the Palestinian people but also against the media that's showing the real Israeli face. And real Israeli violations of human rights.
Targeting the media organizations and journalists in Israeli military offensives in the Gaza Strip isn't an accident. This is systematic targeting of media in Gaza in order to prevent reporting from there and to create a cloak of secrecy around Israeli crimes.
The other Palestinian territories have been simmering with anger over Israel's stepped-up land-grab policies in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds, as well as the regime's desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex, one of the holiest sites in Islam. Days after the regime launched a heavy-handed crackdown on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, during the holy fasting month of Ramadan, tensions spiraled into a broader conflict between Gaza and Israel. Since last Monday, the Israeli military has been launching large-scale airstrikes against Gaza, razing many homes and civilian infrastructure to the ground. The regime's artillery and tanks have also been targeting the blockaded coastal enclave, killing and injuring scores of people, including women and children. Meanwhile, the Palestinian resistance groups have been responding to Israel's acts of aggression with massive barrages of rockets and missiles. They have also brought drones into the equation. Much to Israel's surprise, rocket launches have largely overwhelmed the regime's anti-missile system, dubbed the Iron Dome, and hit several cities across the occupied territories, leaving several dead and dozens of others injured.
So, of course, the Zionists have always believed that they have been protected behind what they called an Iron Dome, that missile defense shield that they believed would defend them from all attacks either from Palestinian resistance forces or from the wider Arab and Islamic world such as Syria, Lebanon, and Iran. Now, we have seen, of course, that this Iron Dome is more like an iron sieve nowadays because the amount of missiles, hundreds and hundreds of missiles that have gotten through and have landed, some of them in strategic places such as cities near the Gaza Strip or near Ben Gurion Airport in the occupied Zionist city of Tel Aviv.
Meanwhile, the regime in Tel Aviv has been under criticism worldwide, with many supporters of the Palestinian cause in Muslim countries and elsewhere holding rallies in solidarity with the Palestinians. As the exchange of fire between the Israeli army and the resistance groups continue, the tensions in the occupied West Bank has reached a fever pitch. So far, several incidents have been recorded where mobs of settlers raided and vandalized Palestinian shops or attacked Palestinian Arabs there.
They are so high up in the clouds, let's say, of their own superiority, of their own master race status, let's say, in the region, that they don't really believe in the possibility of resistance in the region really making a dent in the Zionist armor. And what we have seen now is that there is way more than a dent in the armor. The Palestinians have broken through this armor.
While the Israeli attacks on Palestinians have been met with international condemnation, the United States has stopped short of denouncing the regime's crimes. Washington blocked a U.S. Security Council meeting on the Palestinian situation and prevented the world body from releasing a statement on the issue, saying that such a move would not be helpful to de-escalation talks with the two sides. Washington's support for the regime has sparked an outcry inside the United States, too. Several Democratic members of the U.S. Congress have lashed out at the regime and slammed the United States' unconditional support for it.
We must condition aid to Israel on compliance with international human rights and end the apartheid. We must, with no hesitation, demand that our country recognize the unconditional support of Israel has enabled the erasure of Palestinian life and the denial of the rights of millions of refugees.
As Israel ramps up its attacks on the people of Palestine, such calls for its boycott are growing stronger. But how many more lives should be lost before the voices are heard?
Iran and the remaining signatories to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action are continuing their talks in Vienna to save the nuclear agreement nearly 3 years after Washington's unilateral withdrawal in 2018. The United States is complicating the negotiations by insisting on keeping in place 500 anti-Iran sanctions, including in the 2015 nuclear deal, officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. Informed sources say if kept in place, the sanctions on these 500 individuals and entities will prevent Iran from doing business with the rest of the world, which is in violation of Article 29 of the agreement. This is while Tehran has time and again reiterated that Washington has to take the first step towards reviving the nuclear deal by unconditionally removing all sanctions in a verifiable manner.
It has been the United States who left the JCPOA, who withdrew from the JCPOA. It is the United States who should come first, who should implement its obligations and lift all of its sanctions. And then Iran would verify, and after upon verification, Iran would restart its obligations in the JCPOA.
Tehran has also reiterated its calls that the United States has to remove not some, but all sanctions on the Islamic Republic.
Well, our position is quite clear. All sanctions should be lifted. All sanctions which are mentioned in the JCPOA, and any new sanctions imposed after the adoption day of the JCPOA, including everything during Trump administration. This is our position, it's quite clear, and we are working to come to a conclusion which meet our demands on the sanctions lifting area.
The comments by Araghchi comes as the JCPOA has been in disarray since May 2018, when former U.S. President Donald Trump abandoned the deal and reimposed the anti-Iran sanctions that the JCPOA had removed. The Trump administration has also placed additional sanctions on Iran under other pretexts not related to Iran's nuclear energy program as part of its maximum pressure campaign. The negotiations in Vienna come as the new U.S. administration has expressed readiness to compensate for Trump's mistake and rejoin the deal. It is, however, showing an overriding willingness to maintain some of the sanctions as a tool of pressure. Many believe that the U.S. refusal to remove anti-Iran sanctions would mean the talks are about to fail or have already failed.
I think that we are in a very important situation right now. We will know in the coming days whether the talks will succeed or in fact fail. And the pressure is currently on Washington, because while the Iranian government stands firmly together in their refusal to renegotiate agreements that have been in the works for years now, the American side is completely disorganized, and it's not sure whether President Biden will remain the majority leader in both houses of Congress for the foreseeable future.
Some also believe that there is a possibility that the U.S. will resort to the old tactic of agreeing to a nuclear deal with all of its benefits on paper, yet intimidate other countries from doing business with Iran using the threat of sanctions like it did during the 2015 nuclear agreement. Iran says it will not allow the negotiations to become attritional. Iran's top negotiator in Vienna and Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi says the Islamic Republic would stop the negotiations if it concludes that the other side lacks seriousness, tries to buy time, or seek to add new topics to those under discussion. Iran says the ball is now in the U.S.'s court to return to the agreement and remove all sanctions on Tehran, or pursue the failed policy of its predecessor known as Maximum Pressure Campaign and push ahead with its hostile policy against the Islamic Republic. The Biden administration has so far not taken any solid measure to return to the deal over 100 days after it took the helm in Washington. The next 2 weeks will be decisive, and the negotiations could go either way.
The Ocean of Dua.
Oh, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. To brothers and sisters, we decided to talk about some aspects of dua with regard to the traditions and the verses of the Holy Quran before we move into the commentary of Kumail's supplication. We talked about the value of dua in our traditions and in the verses of the Holy Quran. We also mentioned the value of dua in congregation and the state of staying hopefulness and how despair is negatively affecting the supplications to be answered. Now, in short, if the supplicant wants his dua to be accepted, he should meet certain conditions which are enumerated by the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam in valid books such as Usul al-Kafi or Mahajjatul Bayda or Wasail al-Shia. Now, since we have talked about some of these conditions in the previous versions of the program, and maybe there comes a time that we will talk about all of them in details, we'll just mention a list of such conditions. Islamic purity like wudu and ablution is a must. Ritual washing or ghusl and tayammum, ablution with soil, is another condition. Fulfilling the rights of the people or haqqun nas, which must be gained before the supplication. Sincerity in dua, precise pronunciation of dua, rightfully earned income, and observing and strengthening the kinship ties, or the so-called silatul rahim. Also, charity and sadaqah before dua is really helpful. Among other conditions are the obedience to the Almighty Allah, abstinence from sins, rectification of the deeds, dua at dawn, and in witr, which is the last rak'ah of Salatul Layl. At specific times, dear listeners, dua is recommended, like dua at the true dawn and at sunrise and between noon and evening prayer on Wednesdays, and finally praising the Prophet and his progeny before dua. Among these specific times, dear listeners, is the Thursday night. This night is considered among the best times for dua in the traditions of Ahlul Bayt, to the extent that it is almost equal to the Qadr night in value. The insightful and pious theologians proclaim, spend Thursday night with praying, worshipping, and invoking Allah till morning, if you can, because the compassionate sends the angels to the first heaven to increase the virtues of the believers and abolish their sins.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the beneficent, the merciful Oh Allah, bless Muhammad and his progeny Oh Allah, I beseech you by your mercy which encompasses everything
and by your power by which you overcome everything and which submits to it everything and humble before it is everything. And by your might by which you conquer everything and by your majesty against which nothing can stand and by your greatness which prevails over everything and by your authority which is exercised over everything and by your own self that shall endure forever after everything has vanished and by your names which manifest your power over everything and by your knowledge which pervades everything and by the light of your face which illuminates everything. O he who is light, O he most holy, O he who is light, O he most holy.
It is narrated from Imam Sadiq alayhi salam in a valid tradition. Inna lil jumu'ati haqqan fa iyyaka an tudayya hurmatah. Verily, Fridays enjoy rights incumbent upon people. Therefore, be aware of violating Friday's sanctity through showing shortcoming in acts of worship and instead seek nearness to Allah by means of righteous deeds and abandonment of all forbidden acts. Certainly, on Fridays, Almighty Allah doubles up the rewards, erases forgivingly the punishments for evil doing, and raises the ranks. We also have it in some of our traditions that when Prophet Joseph's brother asked their father, Prophet Ya'qub, to seek forgiveness for them from Allah, Ya'qub said, "I will seek forgiveness for you soon." And he delayed seeking forgiveness for them till Friday dawn so that his exigency will be answered. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam has said, "Avoid committing sins on Thursday nights, since the punishment is doubled then, just as the recompense for virtues is multifold. Whoever avoids sins on Thursday night, Allah will forgive his previous sins, and whoever openly commits sins on Thursday nights, Allah will chastise him for his lifetime of sins and will multiply the punishment of his Thursday night's sins." So, dear listeners, this specific time of Thursday night is greatly seen in the vast ocean of the traditions. Many prayers and supplications have been mentioned for Thursday night, among which Dua Kumail has a special position. We will inshallah get into Kumail's supplication starting up from the name Kumail in the next program. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
close to you through half my life. Yeah.
The light.
What was once an underground movement is now all the buzz. After a 17-year hiatus, billions of red-eyed cicadas, are crawling their way above ground in the United States. These cicadas are known as Brudics, and they are beginning to emerge from the depths of the earth in a dramatic fashion. These bugs have been sighted in 15 eastern states of America. They're around 4 centimeters in length, with unforgettable bright red eyes and iridescent wings. Experts say these insects do not hibernate. In fact, they grow slowly underground for 17 years before they emerge to mate.
There are several misconceptions about periodical cicadas. One is that they're locusts. They're not locusts. Locusts are grasshoppers. Cicadas are much more closely related to aphids. There's another misconception that cicadas are harmful. Cicadas are not harmful. They don't bite. They don't sting. They're not going to harm you or your pet, so you don't have to fear the cicada.
Michael Robb says cicadas tend to thrive on the edges of sunlit forests where it's warmer. They live above ground as adults for about 3 weeks, long enough to reproduce before dying. They lay eggs inside young tree branches, which hatch a few weeks later to restart the cycle. This year's cicada class will bore into the ground and won't emerge until 2038.
Peruvian zoo has showed off 2 baby crocodiles that were born through artificial insemination. The zoo in Lima celebrated their birth 3 months ago. Zookeepers say the 2 crocs are in good health. The American crocodiles now weigh around 70 grams each and measure 26 centimeters in length. However, it's too early to determine the gender of the newborns. American crocodile is in danger of extinction due to pollution and habitat loss.
Paris's Disneyland welcomes back the Magic as it has officially announced its reopening on the 17th of June. The famous theme park is currently in the second closure since the COVID-19 outbreak, being shut for nearly 8 months. With over 17,000 employees, Disneyland Paris canceled its reopening plans twice because of the ongoing pandemic. But now, as France has eased its COVID-19 restrictions and tourist sites are gradually resuming their operations, the park has released a date to open its gates again. The reopening of Disneyland Paris will be the first time all 6 Disney resorts have been open since January 2020, when Shanghai Disneyland first closed due to COVID-19. A French musician has come up with an innovative idea to end his pandemic hiatus, performing on top of a mountain in Swiss Alps. Kehoe performed on a platform at an altitude of 3,000 meters. The 30-year-old artist braved sub-zero temperatures in April to perform. He also had to overcome his fear of heights. Kehoe has not performed in public for more than a year due to COVID-19 restrictions. He says the lockdown offers him a good chance to become more creative.
I feel like I had a lot of creativity during this period because I was stuck in the studio and a lot of time to make music. So usually when I perform gigs and I don't have so much time to spend in the studio. So today, during these days, is like better.
A music production company organized the show. The small platform was taken up to the resort by helicopter. It took 4 hours to install the setting.
Chinese version of the Titanic has been created to keep alive memories of the ship over a century after its ill-fated maiden voyage. The full-scale replica will soon be open to the public. It's part of a theme park in Sichuan Province, southwest China. The construction work started 6 years ago, involving over 100 workers. Around 23,000 tons of steel has been used to build a ship, which is 260 meters long. Designers hope that it will attract up to 5 million visitors a year.
This ship is located in the west part of China. It will attract tourists from the world. We estimate that the number of visitors will be between 2 million to 5 million in a year. This tourist volume should guarantee the return of our investment.
Everything in the duplication, from its cabins to the doorknobs, is identical to the original Titanic. Spending one night on the five-star ship costs around $150. The original luxury vessel sank in April 1912 after hitting an iceberg. Over 1,500 people died in the accident.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Animals living in the Paris Zoological Park will soon be able to see visitors again after months of just interacting with zookeepers due to COVID-19 restrictions. The zoo is preparing to reopen next week with limited numbers of visitors and obligatory health protocols. During the shutdown, the park welcomed over 60 new babies, including baboons, penguins, and flamingos. Experts believe the reopening will reawaken animals' curiosity.
Seeing public again will reawaken the animals' curiosity. They also look at the visitors. Some are very interested. You'll see the seals when they're with small children. It's part of enriching their environment to see a little bit of people, of diversity. So it's good for everyone.
The park, which temporarily closed last October, houses 2,500 animals of 234 species. France is now easing its COVID-19 restrictions and plans to reopen museums, zoos, shops, and cinemas on May the 19th. Looking for a cheaper and more sustainable alternative to traditional lawn mowers? May be the answer. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, have embarked on a project to test the effectiveness of sheep as new lawn mowers. The project includes 25 sheep of four different breeds. They are going to graze on a one-acre plot of pasture for 3 days. The process will be repeated after a month.
The sheep have been used for a couple of things. So they're as good as goats in reducing down the vegetation. So in areas where there is, it doesn't just have to be a lawn. If they're in their areas where there's overgrown and you've got sort of those higher fuel ladders, they can eat that down. But what they also do, so they can cut that out, but then they also can come around and after there's been a fire, they're really good at eating the weeds that come up initially, the weeds that we don't want, those invasive weeds.
Researchers believe that the initiative also has an environmental impact. With fewer mowers, there might be less emission. They also hope using sheep will help increase natural fertilization and nutrient levels.
Using an unusual array of tools for a haircut. That's what a Pakistani barber does to rise above the competition. Ali Abbas lives in the city of Lahore, eastern Pakistan. He uses blow torches, knee cleavers, and even broken glass to do a cut. He typically begins a haircut with a blowtorch to take a bit off the top. He then uses a cleaver and butcher's block and sometimes broken glass to cut the lower layers. His style is proving to be a hit.
This idea was not a joke. One day I was thinking of doing something different. It was my desire to do something in a different way. Since I started this, my customers have increased. People's confidence has been boosted. When you're visible on a platform and people see you, people will say, we must try this, we should try this.
Abbas has been using this style since 2016. He says he has received a very good response from his clients. His peculiar approach has also resulted in TV appearances and fashion shoots. It's not an everyday scene for Londoners to see a whale swimming in the River Thames, but over the weekend, the city witnessed a small whale being rescued after it got stuck along the river. The baby whale was first spotted in the evening, becoming stranded on the locked boat rollers in Richmond. Rescuers worked during the night to free the 4-meter-long whale. After 4 hours, the injured animal was successfully moved to a safer location. A vet is now monitoring its situation to make sure it's healthy enough to be released back to the ocean.
People around the world dream of having special weddings, but these couples in Russia have made their wishes come true. 30 couples in Moscow have gotten married on cable car cabins, hoping to set a world record. The sweethearts exchanged vows mid-air with a picturesque view of rainy Moscow. If the attempt to set a record is verified and confirmed, it will go to the Guinness Book of World Records. The wedding ceremony in Russia has turned into an extraordinary one as it was celebrated on a 720-meter-long cable car. 30 Russian couples tied the knot in the moving cable car cabins on Saturday. Even rainy weather in Moscow didn't stop them. The newlyweds said they wanted to make their already special day as unusual as possible. They also hoped that their mass wedding would set a Guinness World Record. The remains of 9 Neanderthals have been found near the Italian capital, Rome. Archaeologists believe the oldest one is dated to around 100,000 years ago. The other 8 remains are dated between 50,000 and 68,000 years ago. Researchers unearthed the fossil fragments in the Guattari prehistoric cave, or caves I should say, near Rome. Neanderthals are the closest ancient relatives of humans. They died out about 40,000 years ago. Some theories say they died because of their inability to adapt to climate change.
IRIB English Radio.